So the main topic for today is execution monitoring and replanning. I wanted to close up one little thing that I should have mentioned last time. And there's so much more for the oversubscription planning, but at least it seems as if I should mention to you that as of the last planning competition, PDDL, the version 3, and it's actually now being extended to what, 3.2 or something now? 3.1. So PDDL 3 allows, on top of everything else, it allows for essentially specification of soft constraints on the trajectories. Okay, so now in what that means is essentially you're now going to convert planning problem into a more interesting optimization problem. The selection of object, the oversubscription planning that we looked at becomes a special case, you know, a related case of this. And in fact, if you remember, in the beginning of last class, I mentioned that the last time we cared about putting preferences on the solutions was hierarchical task network planning, right? Okay, and hierarchical task networks were already putting preferences over solutions. It's just that they made them hard preferences. Mostly they made them hard preferences in the sense, if you don't actually get a solution that is parsable by the task reduction schemas, then it's not a solution. What you would like to actually say is any solution is fine, but the ones that are parsable have better merit. Okay, and if you start doing that, then essentially, you know, you're getting oversubscription planning or partial satisfaction planning, or at least planning as an optimization problem where you have soft constraints. Okay, so anyway, so what they did in PDDL 3 was to come up with a bunch of constraints on the trajectories on the plan. So basically, it's sort of more closer to the sort of TL plan view of preferences than the HTN view of preferences. Okay, so they, you know, if your constraints are more in terms of what state sequences the final good solutions must pass through and must not pass through, then you can write them as, you know, trajectory constraints. Okay, now remember again, just as HTN, TL plan constraints also were preferences over solutions, except they were being viewed as required, you know, hard constraints, but you can make them soft constraints. Okay, so anyway, PDDL 3 can be thought of as taking TL plans out of state sequence constraints, trajectory constraints, and giving numbers to them. So you provide, apart from I should go from initial state to goal state, you say that I have certain extra preferences over the sequences of states that you go through. And each preference is named. And there is a violation cost associated with each preference. So then the planning problem would be find a solution which goes from the initial to goal state and violates the fewest of the preferences, the lowest mass of preferences. Okay, so that's the way the PDDL 3 actually allows you to specify the partial satisfaction planning problems. Okay, so here is an example. So you can have mixed hard and soft constraints, and you basically can have constraints on the trajectory. You can also have constraints on what preconditions must be holding before actions, which is again sort of a state, generalized state sequence conditions. And then, you know, each preference has a name. So here, this is a preference named have soil. And then the final metric is described in terms of the preferences, weighted sum of preferences that are violated. Okay, so that's basically what is currently there in PDDL 3. Now, why did they go with this as against something else? It's anybody's guess. But one interesting thing, of course, is some of this can be converted into PSP net benefit problem, right? So in fact, Jay over there, basically, since we look at the oversubscription planning problems as the PSP net benefit problems, the ones that we discussed last time. So what he would do is he would take this kind of a specification and compile it down to an equivalent PSP net benefit problem and then solve it. Okay, but in general, of course, you could have preferences on trajectories which can't be compiled into final goal preferences. Okay, That makes it harder. However, you know, once we go to temporal planning, once you go into temporal planning, then you realize that you can talk about goals at any time. Okay, so I can have a goal not just at the end of the plan. I can say my goals involve being here at 3:15, being at home at 6:30, being on the bed at 9 o'clock, and all of them are just, that's my goal state really. Okay, so you can actually, you know, if you consider a PSP net benefit version of temporal planning, then it also allows you to talk about trajectory. Okay, but currently you have, so in fact there's a picture somewhere. Okay, so essentially you can think of strips, which are just all hard goals, and strips with the net benefit that we discussed in the class last time, that we spent most time on, PSP net benefit. That's, you know, extra set of constraints, and then there is, you know, PDL 3.0, which actually part of it can be compiled back to OSP, but part of it cannot. Okay, but ultimately the thing that does matter is it's useful to understand that when you thought about HTN planning, TL plan, sort of knowledge-based planning, one way of thinking of them as putting extra constraints on the plan. And if you're putting extra constraints on the plan, and if they are not hard constraints, if they can be soft constraints, then the nature of planning becomes of an one of an optimization, because not all solutions are created equal anymore. Okay? So that's something that I wanted to bring up. And so you actually can play with, I mean, there are, you know, multiple planners which can handle PDL 3.0. So in fact, the overall tutorial, I only looked at some of the slides last class, but you know, the rest of the slides that I didn't go through also talk about, for example, the planners that can handle, you know, the other planners that, for example, convert everything into, let's say, a SAT encoding. Okay, and then convert the trajectory constraints also as SAT constraints, and then do weighted SAT. Okay, for example, there are planners like that, and there are a bunch of other solutions, and they're all kind of surveyed in that tutorial that we gave. And then there is also this other half of the tutorial, which is mostly handling qualitative preferences. Here, this is actually metric preferences, because in the end, you are kind of giving values to all the violations, and you can compare two plans. Okay? Anyway, so this is something that I just wanted to bring up to close the loop on the fact that, in fact, oversubscription planning is already present in the current planning competitions, and the PDL 3.0 allows you to handle that. Okay. Okay. So then the other one that I want to do today, of course, is execution monitoring and replanning. Before I go and do my slides, are there questions? You guys read a bunch of papers, or the so normally you can ask me questions and then we'll go on, and I have my prepared slides, obviously I can fill the time. Is there anything hard, difficult, easy? Okay, so apparently everything is easy, so let's see. Most of the time when I ask rhetorical questions, you should be able to answer it now. So, because it's all easy. Okay, let's see. So, why replanning? So, we basically looked till now about modeling a planning problem as deterministic dynamics, instantaneous actions, fully specified preconditions and effects, and no other agents, so it's static, and it's fully observable. That's what we decided, and we came up with a domain model. Fine. Okay, so you made a plan. Now, of course, you make plans because, you know, although plans can themselves be useful. First of all, one of the things that I always am amazed at is I somehow find a way to do this every 4 years when the presidential election is going on, and plans are the only things people care about. Nobody really cares about whether Obama or, you know, Clinton or McCain are actually ever going to execute their plans. Nobody really does. Okay, but we do differentiate between them, saying my plan could do this, my plan could do this. So plans by themselves are interesting. We all know that once they get elected, they're not going to do any of this stuff, you know, because something else will come and you'll forget about this plan. Okay, and this is not surprising at all. In fact, Winston Churchill said that in, somebody, I forget, one of these big generals said that in battle, it's imperative that you have plans for the battle. It's not imperative that you follow them. You must have plans, that's all. Okay? And so, in a way, what all of that means is plans are important even if you don't plan to execute them ever. Okay, so which actually makes us feel good, because till now we have never executed any plans. We've just been talking about how to generate them. Okay, but suppose you actually were executing them, because after all, one of the reasons you would make plans is to execute them. Then, when you execute, apparently, you might want to replan. Something went wrong. You made a plan and it's not working. Okay, and so you want to replan. So why would you need to replan? Because you recognize during execution that something is gone astray. Okay, something has gone astray. Now, of course, that recognition itself is quite intelligent. In fact, there is this beautiful, you know, story of an engineer and a mathematician and a scientist. They're all trying to prove that all odd numbers are prime numbers. Right, and you know, the and one of the nice things, of course, is the and of course the mathematician says 1 is a prime number, 3 is a prime number, 5 is a prime number, and so by induction it's all prime numbers. Okay, and the one that I like is the engineer, you know, who says 1 is a prime number, 3 is a prime number, 5 is a prime number, 7 is a prime number, 9 is a prime number, 15 is a prime number, and he just keeps going. Okay, so if you don't sense that something has gone astray, then you have proved yourself. You know, you don't even have to actually see that the, you know, if you're keeping your mouth, you know, eyes shut and just keep doing all the actions, then you don't even know whether your plan is actually right or wrong. So we'll assume that somehow you are monitoring your execution to see whether or not the plan is going according to what you expected. Okay. Now notice that in this particular case, in fact, there are situations where you can't actually monitor anything, because, for example, we did mention in the beginning of the class, and we'll get to it later again, that if you have no sensing, then you have to generate conformant plans, where all you can do is just do those actions. You prove to yourself that if the world is to be good, then when I'm done, the world would have reached the right thing. So it's like somebody else will tell you, yes, you did reach the goal. In, you know, in such a case, when you're executing a conformant plan, there's nothing to monitor. You just execute. Okay, but here we assume that the world is actually observable. So you want to observe and you see whether or not the plan is going according to the plan, quote unquote. And if it's not, then you have to recognize that and you have to restart some sort of a, something to repair the plan so that it will go to the right direction. Okay, now of course, what could go wrong? What could go wrong? So the first two slides that I'll be doing right now would basically be talking about replanning in a much more general way than the Russell and Narvig 2 pages that you at least hopefully have read. Okay, and that we will call that the simplistic or simple replanning. We'll get to that in the fourth slide. Okay, but let's first think in terms of what actually, when do people do replanning, if you are thinking of doing your own planning. Okay, so you could be doing it because you see that there is an execution failure. Okay, you cannot do something, or you can see a failure, you know, waiting for you. Because, for example, you know that the third action from here would require a particular precondition, and it's already not true. It should be true by now. It's not true. And so you know that you, when you get to that action, it cannot be done. Okay, that's the recognition. Okay. Now, the similarly, quality reduction is actually a different issue, which is you may be able to do the plan, but the plan that you actually did is not anywhere near as good as you thought it was. Okay, now I want you to keep in mind this picture in when I'm discussing everything in today's class, because I'm hoping that first of all you see that there is a problem, right? That in fact, you know, if you do find an alien, you know, that's way more important than taking pictures of silly rocks. But then, you know, this guy has made important plans to take pictures of the silly rocks, and you know, he is going to stick to his plan. You know, we stick to the course, right? So in fact, one of the interesting things is to be able to see, I mean, as this discussion goes on, one of the things you want to think of is how could this guy not have done the funny thing, and how could I have done the right thing, which is obviously to say, my God, I'm changed my goals now. Now I basically used, I guess, these same things to kind of catch him on the head and put him back and then bring it home. Okay, that's part of the issue. So how do you actually realize, and then what would have changed there is quality of the plan. Suddenly the plan that you are following is not the optimal plan at all. Do you understand what I'm saying? And in fact, you know, the stuff that you read in Russell and Harvig essentially will, you know, this guy actually is polite. Russell and Harvig would replan to blow this guy to bits and then take the picture of the rock and get out, because it's important to stick to the old plan. Okay? So, and the only reason that's wrong is it does avoid the execution failure, but it reduced, it basically lost the quality. You had an opportunity to get much higher quality for the plan. And the reason I actually got here after oversubscription planning rather than before is because you guys are now thinking also in terms of quality of plans. Not all plans are created equal. And we have, in some sense, you'll notice by the end of today's class, we have at least some of the tools required to actually talk about how to do this. Yes?
So that quality reduction is really something like exogenous events, right? Like, for example, so the alien pops up, or suppose, so Romeo is trying to go to the California Science Center, and then there's an earthquake, and it's toppled, and it's no longer there. So it's really an exogenous event. It's not that your plan quality...
Yes, no, I keep that in mind. Okay, no, well, it can happen in multiple ways. First of all, it is actually possible in this previous case. Again, I'm going forward. Imagine that everything that NASA will send up, I'm pretty sure they have in the back of the stack of goals, let's find a life form. I mean, that's the whole point of NASA, right? It's just that they don't expect it ever to be reachable. That goal is not reachable. So if you think in terms of oversubscription planning, find an alien is always in the list of goals that you could have selected. The reason you couldn't select before was because you thought it wasn't feasible. You did an estimation, you did a relaxed plan, and you found, yeah, they are not any, you know, given my initial state, it's not possible. But then the state changed. So now it became feasible. So the question then is, I'm not saying exogenous events aren't important for replanning, but this particular thing could have been non-exogenous. Exogenous, the goal was always there, it's just it became feasible now. And what changed is the world did not go according to your plan. But you can also have situations where new goals are added, in which case that could be considered exogenous. But that's the whole point of the second point, which is how can replanning be necessitated at all? Why would it ever even possible? Why is it even possible that you suddenly, when you're executing your plan, you suddenly find that there is an execution failure about to happen, or that suddenly find that it's no longer of the quality that you thought it would be? Why is this feasible at all? Why is it feasible? On single answer, modeling failure. That's it. Now, one of the interesting things that you will keep in mind, and we'll come back to it a little later, is the modeling failure could be intentional because you want to make your life simple and model the world to be more simpler than what it really is. Or you actually really failed. Okay, having said modeling failure, you should keep in mind that all models are wrong. Any model you come up with is wrong. Okay, and it's going to fail someday. So ultimately, one way of thinking about why replanning would be needed is modeling failure, and clearly, replanning is going to be very much needed if your original model was the most simplistic one possible, which is all goals are given upfront, the initial state is completely specified, all actions are known, they're all instantaneous, there is nobody else in the environment, and everything is completely observable, and the dynamics are deterministic. So there you are more likely to need replanning. But if you actually did something more, slightly more expressive domain model, you may still need replanning. Okay? So in general, it's a question of modeling failure. Now, so why does the modeling failure happen? As I said, you know, the world is actually not static. It probably is dynamic. Okay? The world is not deterministic, it is stochastic. The world is not fully observable, it's actually partially observable. You thought the initial state, you knew exactly what was in, but some of the things you didn't notice properly. The specific action model you assumed is faulty. This is important too. It's also part of the modeling failure. So you assumed the action has the following preconditions and the following effects. It has little more preconditions or little more effects. Okay? That's a modeling failure. And you guys did this when you wrote your little domains, you found sometimes that, oh, I should have to add this extra thing. How did you figure this out? You found a wrong plan. The reason you thought it was a wrong plan is you mentally simulated this plan, you know, which is actually like, which is like executing it. You are the simulator, which is more than what the planner knows about the world. So you knew it was wrong, so you fixed the domain model. Okay? So the specific action you model assumed is faulty. The specific cost reward model you assume is faulty. Is faulty. Okay. So the idea is that not only just the preconditions and effects, but it could be that some actions are much costlier than you assumed they were, are much cheaper than you assumed they were. Similarly, certain goals have much higher reward than you assumed, are much lower reward than you assumed, each of which will change what is the optimal plan. Okay? And then the problem specification is not yet complete. So it's like sometimes this happens, you know, it's like the initial state was given, the goals were given, and you started running, but then new goals started being given, or some of the old goals went away. Okay? Now, I would say all of these essentially can cause you to change your plan. Okay? Now, in literature, normally, pieces of these have been given different names. So, for example, this one in particular, you can think of this as continual planning. That means you are never done. You will have, if you look at that NASA paper, right, it's like every day they'll get new goals, apart from the old goals that they're considering. So one way they could have done it, of course, is to say, get me all the goals and then I'll start doing planning. Okay? But obviously, what matters here is that the original plan was not actually considering those goals, and you're getting new goals. Okay? So all of these can be thought of in general as modeling failures. Okay? Now, what should you do? So you have possibly reasons why plans will fail, and you also have to recognize, first you have to be able to recognize it. Recognition actually could be hard. What we said here is that replanning might be needed, and it's normally needed because of the modeling failure. Now, when replanning is needed, what do you need to do? You, the planner. First, you need to be able to recognize that something is astray. As I pointed out, that could be pretty hard. It could be easy in some cases if it's a fully observable world and all you care about is stopping execution failures. It might be easy. In fact, that's exactly what you read. The triangle tables was exactly doing that. Okay? But it could be quite non-trivial if what's going wrong is the quality of the plan. The current plan is still executable, but it's no longer going to be the best plan around. Okay? And to do this, in fact, now one of the problems, in fact, you'll realize is that one way, how could you actually realize that you probably have to change the objective that you are focusing on in that cartoon. You essentially, when you get to a new state, if the state is not exactly what you expected it to be, but it still does not stop the execution of the rest of the plan, Russell says, go ahead and execute the rest of the plan. But you would say, since the state is not exactly what I expected it to be, maybe there is a reason to check whether or not the goals I selected in my oversubscription planning are still the right set of goals to select or not. Okay? So in some sense, every time the world is not exactly what you expected it to be, you would check. Okay? Now, of course, that's the worst case scenario. What is interesting, of course, is if you do that much of, compulsive monitoring and re-evaluation of your objectives, your execution would be extremely slow. So the big thing in execution monitoring would be somehow be interrupt driven, somehow, know when to check without having to completely check and find that, oh, nothing has changed, let me move on. If you do that every 3 seconds or every 3 milliseconds, then you're dead. Okay? So that in itself, execution monitoring, especially execution monitoring in the context of plan quality, is a tricky problem. Okay? And then the second, of course, is having figured out that something has gone wrong and you need to change something, you should at least fix the problem for now. If you recognize the problem, you should fix the problem for now at least. okay? And the simplest is restart the execution somewhere, possibly. You know, that's that mental model essentially is somehow if you restart the execution of the plan from somewhere else, maybe this exact problem won't happen again. Okay, the more, I mean, of course, this could basically, we do this, you know, we try to start something, it didn't work out, so, you know, you restart it. Okay, just see, hopefully next time the program would come up fine. Okay, in fact, it just happened to me, just before I came to the class, I was opening my Emacs and with my, you know, some dot text file, and it came up with like 9-point font, and I was trying to change the font size, it won't change. Now, obviously, there is a deeper reason as to why it happened. I have no clue. But what did I do? I killed the Emacs. I restarted. I mean, I went back to my Google Mail and clicked on the file. This time, I checked again. In this case, it actually changed. So if it did not, then I would have probably figured out what was wrong. But in this case, the font did change. So my plan did work. Okay. So the more complex one, of course, is if the restarting does not work and if there is no good restart point, then first figure out where you are. Okay, I mean, it's not necessary that you must do the simplest one. I mean, this is a more interesting one that you will ultimately wind up doing. Figure out where you are. Now, figuring out where you are is more complex than what it might look like. It's not just what state of the world I am in. You need to know what is the current state of the world, what is the current goals, what is the current cost matrix, everything. In the most general case, all of them have to be refigured. Okay? So, initial state, you would sense. Goal state, you reselect the objectives to see if the goal state has changed. Okay, assume for now that the underlying planner is just going to do simple classical planning. So, it needs to be given a new initial state, a new goal state, and a new cost, you know, model. Okay? Cost and reward, you need to modify the cost and rewards to allow for new goals. Impossible actions and are, we'll look at this in a minute, commitments and reservation penalties. Let me say this again anyway right now. One interesting question is, if you started executing a plan and if it's not working, let me come to the next one. So you change the problem specification to look at the current state, look at the current goals, look at the current cost model, and then you plan. Okay, that's all replanning is. So now the underlying planner gets a new initial state, goal state, and you know, cost matrix, and it replans. Okay, the replanning is just being called again. Okay, now the question, of course, is this process of planning any different? I mean, as far as the planner is concerned, does it actually, the fact that it's being called now in the middle of execution, is that any different from originally? That is actually a tricky point. Okay, so think about the following scenario. So I have decided to go to Tucson. I wanted to drive to Tucson. Okay, and then I basically, I have to go to Tucson. My original goal was to go to Tucson. So yesterday I realized I have to go to Tucson. Then I realized that I will drive. Okay, and then I called up my friend who lives in Casa Grande, which by the way falls on the way to Tucson on Route 10, and told him that, hey, you know, I'm passing by, I'll say hello to you, and you know, hang around in this little, you know, restaurant, and then meet you. Okay, so then in this particular case, that's what I did, and then my goals change. Okay, somebody, for example, said, you know, we don't have time to go by car, you know, we'll just go by flight. Oh no, we don't have time to go by car. Or furthermore, not only must you go to Tucson, you should also stop by in Bisbee. Okay, my question now is, the only goals that change as far as my problem is concerned is, apart from Tucson, I also have Bisbee. That's it. That's the only goal that changed. But then, since I did the mistake of publicizing my plan, I'm going to make somebody unhappy who will be hanging around waiting for me in a restaurant, and I'm not going to meet them. Okay, of course, you say cell phones are invented, you call them and tell them. But the important issue is, you now have a goal that was never a part of the original goals. it came only because you publicized the plan. And because you publicized the plan, in some sense, publicizing of the plan is a partial execution of the plan. Okay? And when you partially execute the plan, so another thing I could have done, for example, is since I knew that I was going to go to Tucson, I decided to rent a car and I did a non-refundable rental. You know, and then now I don't need to go by car. I can go by something else. I can go with one of you guys. Now, in some sense, I'm stuck with my reservation. I have to do something with it. Okay. So the basic point is that the fact that the previous plan was made could lead and was publicized or was partially executed might induce additional commitments. Are additional reservations. Okay, that is how. So if you had the same exact goals up front, you would have done something different than if these goals came up during the execution failure. Okay, again, the reason you never cared about it is because you assumed you are the only person in the world when you made the plan. You thought it was a static environment. If it's static environment, there is no my friend to talk about. I'm the only guy. Okay? So the point and we'll get back to this later, but in general, having made a plan, you sort of have some commitment associated with that plan. Okay? And not keeping them could lead to something bad. And the question, of course, one question is how do you actually model it? Okay? And I'll say it now itself and we'll get back to it later. But one way it seems you could model it is essentially extra constraints that the plan must satisfy. And if you fail those constraints, then you get a negative, it's like a violation cost. Okay? In the OSP kind of a scenario, I might now say that I also, in addition to my old goals, I also have this goal of meeting my friend in the restaurant in Casa Grande. And it has probably no reward, but it definitely has a penalty because my friend would be unhappy if I don't actually go and say hello. So in terms of optimality, if you don't pick this goal, you get some negative cost. Negative utility. Okay? So we'll look at that in a minute, but in essence, what I'm saying is that the replanning that Russell and Norvig basically talks about and that we tend to think about upfront is the simplest scenario. Okay, and this, all the things, quality and additional agents and the commitments of the plan, these things come up when you in fact do replanning yourself. Okay, and so if you want, you have to model those correctly too. Okay, now finally, if this thing keeps happening, so that means every time you make a plan, it's failing exactly in the same place. So if my font was, I restart the thing and my font again doesn't show up correctly, I need to change my model. There's something wrong in the way I am restarting my Emacs, or something wrong in the way I made my plan. Okay, so ultimately, in a way, replanning is telling you that your model was wrong. Okay, now of course, ultimately, you have to fix the model. You may decide to not fix the model if, in fact, originally you simplified the model just to make your life simple, and you hope that you'll only be failing once in a while, in which case it's still worth it. Okay, so in fact, we'll talk about in a minute later that replanning is like a universal antidote for domain modeling laziness. If you want to be lazy about modeling domains, you just model it any which way and then fail and then try to fix it. The real question is, how often do you have to fix? Okay? So again, there's nothing wrong in going with the wrong model if it causes only very occasional failures. So it's just an issue that you talk about in terms of amortization of cost. Okay. So having said this and having kind of opened the possibilities that replanning has to deal with, let's now come down to simple replanning, which is the one that Russell and Norvig talked about, or most replanning papers talk about, which is replanning is necessitated only because of the correctness consideration. Only because of correctness consideration. So something went wrong with the current plan. It's not the quality. Just execute the damn thing. That's it. Okay. So problem specification you assume is complete. No new goals are being added. You don't consider reselection of objectives because that's a quality-oriented issue. So, you know, replanning, you know, in that alien scenario is to mow down the alien and go take a nice picture. And that's completely correct, because the plan would still be able to execute. Okay. And in a blocks world, that's a reasonable thing to do. Right? I mean, you know, blocks don't have feelings, and you assumed you knew exactly which blocks are supposed to be in what place, and if they didn't stay in the right place, you just get to the right place. Okay. So for that simple replanning, it's still worth looking at what are the techniques involved in monitoring and what are the techniques involved in replanning. Okay. So monitoring itself is basically to figure out, of course, you could do the following thing. The simplest kind of monitoring is you're about to do an action, its preconditions are not unsatisfied. So the laziest kind of monitoring is, the most ignorant kind of monitoring is just do all the actions and say, I'm done. Okay, and if somebody around says, are you stupid, you have not reached the goal, then you say, oh, okay, then I'll redo the whole thing. Okay, that's the most laziest as well as ignorant way. The other is, at least not be ignorant, but be lazy. Okay, so wait, do all the actions, open your eyes, check whether the goals are satisfied. If not, something went wrong, so you try to do replanning. And in general, what you're trying to do is, as long as you do have eyes, and as long as sensing is not too costly, that's an important point, okay? If the sensing is not too costly, then look at the states that you went through. And at any point, it's not enough that that state is enough to execute the next action, but it should also be enough to provide all the dependencies it does provide to the rest of the actions downstream. It's a very simple idea. Okay, so in essence, if you have a plan like this, start to end, and these things are causal links. There is a proof of correctness of the plan, and you have causal links saying who is giving what to who. Okay, and all you care about essentially is that, you know, you satisfy some cut set here. You satisfy some cut set here. Okay, so your current state satisfies one of the cut sets. Okay, what I mean by cut set here is that if I basically cut through here, then essentially this condition, and this condition must be true in the state I have in front of me. If not, from there I can't execute the plan. Now notice that this only makes sense if I'm interested only in the correctness of the downstream plan. This is not enough if I'm interested in checking whether in fact my plan is totally suboptimal. Because that's why, in the worst case, you really have to kind of every few milliseconds, you have to restart planning again, because things could have changed. Okay, and in the best case, and what you're trying to do is based on what kind of constraints the plan has to satisfy in terms of correctness and optimality, what you're trying to figure out is what must be the footprint of the correctness here. For the rest of the plan to be correct, what must be true here? Okay, in the context of causal links, it's just the set of causal links that are crossing that point. That's all. Okay, in fact, now having done that, suppose you found that, so you have your own mental counter. You said, I done the first action, second action, third action. I'm about to do the, first and second action. I'm about to do this action, so I must be somewhere here. So for this state to be correct according to what I expect it to be, it must have this condition, this and this true. It can have everything else, that's fine. This, you know, state may also have additional information such as, by the way, there is an alien hanging around. We ignore that. That wasn't part of the specification. I'm not looking for that. Unless the alien is blocking my view, in which case I'll tell them to get out. Okay? So you can think of these as the required states between each of those actions, okay? Or you can also think of it, it's useful, you can also think of it as if there is an invariant that must be satisfied at the end for this plan to be correct, okay? And if you regress that invariant over the actions, and what you got here essentially is the footprint of that invariant. This is what must be true before this, such that the rest of the plan would get me to the goal state. That's another way of thinking about it. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you could either think of it in terms of just the causal links, or if it is especially a totally ordered plan like this, you can think of it as start with the goals here, regress it using your regression ideas, remember, and then compute the regress state here. That's exactly what is supposed to be holding. That's the weakest conditions that must be holding. So you could go forward from here. Both are useful. In fact, causal links can be thought of as computing the regression. Okay. Now, one interesting use for thinking in terms of causal links is that you can easily generalize this. So basically, this stuff is called, you know, what was talked about as triangle tables in the chapter are essentially these cut sets. Okay. But if you think in terms of cut sets, you can also extend this for execution of partially ordered plans. Although I wouldn't particularly care about it here. You know, I can imagine that all plans are totally ordered. But if I happen to have a partially ordered plan, such that any topological sorted ordering of that plan would be correct, right? Then you can essentially extend the notion of triangle tables to partially ordered plans just by considering the cut sets over the partially ordered plan. Okay? So I won't go too much into that detail because we don't really care as much in this class. And until now, at any rate, we didn't say too much about partially ordered plans being executed. But it's something that you can do quite easily. Okay. Now, having found, so now if I am here and I'm expecting to be these conditions to be true and they are not true, if one of them fails, that means the rest of the plan isn't going to execute correctly. So there is a problem. Now what do? One idea is, in this simple replanning, I can see if there is a restart point. So I know that I am state f dash. F dash should be corresponding to this, which requires these to be true. It's not. But then I can see if it corresponds to any of the states here or here or here or here. If it does, then I'm done. I just go start executing from there. Okay, so think of it this way. So you're trying to put A on top of, A, B, C. So you're trying to put B on top of C and A on top of B. And there is a little kid who is trying to make your life hard. Okay, as you're doing actions, they are undoing sometimes, or sometimes they're going ahead and completing your action. Both of which will lead to execution failure. Especially if after I put B on top of C, if this kid puts A on top of B, right? At this point, it's actually a failure because that's not where it's supposed to be, right? So basically, you cannot do the next action because its preconditions are not satisfied. But then you can see if that state satisfies any of the required states. If it does, in this particular case, what would happen is that it would satisfy the required states to hold before the goal state. So you're done, actually. But in general, you could be skipping forward as well as backward. Okay, so one thing is, irrespective of how the plan has been made, you can think of the plan as defining a finite state automaton. Okay, so all that says is, if the state before me holds, do the action. Okay, originally you assumed that you just go through this state, this state, this state, this state, this state. But then what replanning is causing you to do is you're skipping around in the states. You know, you went forward for a while, went back, went forward. The worst thing that can happen to you, of course, is the current state does not satisfy any of the states. That's when actually the plan automaton has not been able to cover all possible states. Okay? That's the basic idea. Now, so here is the plan automaton. It tells you, think of any single plan as a partial policy. Okay, so the idea of what's a policy? A policy tells you, assuming that you have a goal, it tells you, given your current state, what's the best action to do so that eventually you get to the goal. And what a single line plan tells you is, you know, since you know the initial state, you'll only be in the initial state in the beginning. So you do the action from there, then you'll get to here, then you do the action, etc. And then it only tells you, as long as you're in the state that you're expected to be, it'll tell you how to get to the goal state. Okay. Now, if during replanning the failures are such that, in fact, you fall out of the envelope of those states, right? Then the question is, what do you do? Okay, and the simplest idea from the point of view of replanning, the simplest idea is, if you find yourself, let's say, in a state, you know, like say here, you are trying to go and make a beeline to one of the states from where you know how to go out. Okay, like for, think about what happens when you are following directions that somebody gave you to get to their home, and then suddenly there was a detour, you had to get out, and then now you're no longer sure where you are. Okay. So you could either try to find a plan, you know, nowadays you have these navigation aids, so you can try to find a plan from this state all the way to the goal state, or just get back to any of the states that you know. So make a plan to get back to any of the states you know, and then follow the original plan. Okay, so that's basically what replanning will require, which is, if you want to do it in the most general way, in a sense, what you need to do is, if you are stuck in this state, find which of these goals would, which of these states would make the best goal state, and then just get there. Another way of thinking about it, as long as I'm just doing it conceptually, I would say that take the, remember the, I have the plan, right? So I have this plan. So this is a goal state too. If I satisfy this goal state, then I can start going from here. If I satisfy this cut set, I can start going from here. Okay, so I essentially have 15 possible goal states if I have a 15 step plan. And it's a disjunctive set of goals. This, you know, conjunctive, each set is conjunctive and there's a disjunction among them, and then you pick one and then satisfy that. And if you do that, you got it. Okay. And of course you could, if you want to do it right, you could actually use the reachability heuristics again to figure out which state, which of these states are close to this state. Yeah. I mean, no, in the sense,
no, why not to start from scratch?
You could do that. You could do that. It depends upon, I mean, I would not just start from scratch all the time, because it could well be that finding this is actually cheaper. Okay, you may very well decide to start from the scratch, or just basically go from the current state to the goal state. Now, here is a good question, which is, if in fact I have decided, for whatever reason, whether I'm right or wrong, if I have decided that it's too expensive for me to figure out how to get back on track, so I just assume that I would not go back, I'll just try to find a plan from here to here. So do I have any kind of allegiance to my old plan? And the point, based on, I hope, based on the discussion we had until now, you should realize that as long as you don't think there is no other agents, I mean, you don't think there are any other agents, you have no allegiance to your plan. The only reason you want to go back to this is because you think it will make your remaining, the planning would be cheaper. If you are one of those people who actually think that that is a harder planning problem than going from here directly to the goal state, you should do that. Okay, so the only reason replanning in the simple scenario might wind up using existing plan would be because it thinks it improves the planning cost. That's all. Nothing else. It improves the planning cost. Okay, and if you think it doesn't, then just solve the problem from scratch. You can do that. That's fine. But much of the literature on replanning actually essentially tries to get back on track, because the assumption is that planning is hard. Just planning cost is going to be too high. So going from wherever you are to the goal state might be harder than going from wherever you are to one of the close by states. Having said that, let me point out to you that there isn't any clean work that I know of which actually does that simple thing I just told you, which is, if I have, this is my initial state now, try to find out which of these are the closest states and then make a direct run to it. It's a reasonable thing to do, but nobody has done it as far as I know. And figuring that out is just a reachability heuristic. Yes, sir.
Also, if you want to trace your way back to the nearest state, wouldn't it be preferable to trace your back to one of the states down the line? Because if you trace back,
we have no idea. The interesting issue is, what is down the line versus up the line is dependent upon the connectivity of the underlying state graph.
I mean, at what point of, like, at what state the failure occurs? If you go to some given state
Well, that's an interesting issue. I mean, that's basically over and above. So your point is somehow there is this place is jinxed. So let's not get to that. But jinx theory of domain modeling is no better than, you know, not knowing why that failure occurred. I mean, you may well be right, you know, and many of us do. Let's not, that place seems to be jinxed, let's not go there. But, you know, it's not particularly, there is no specific reason why, you know, if in fact it's this kid, right, say, who is doing this to me, there's nothing I can do. You know, irrespective of the state I am in, this kid is going to do something bad to me. Okay? So what you're doing is extra logical, essentially. You're just going with additional theories of why the failure may have happened. You cannot explain the failure anyway. All you know is you were supposed to be in one state, you are in another state. Okay, here's actually a very good point. So when you do find yourself in a state other than the one that you are supposed to be in, do you have an explanation? The only explanation you have is, my model must have been wrong. That's it. It could be because of stochasticity, that means the action has unknown effects and you didn't count for it. Or the action has unknown preconditions you didn't count for, I'm sorry, it could be because of stochasticity, in the sense actions have, you know, non-deterministic stochastic effects. It could be because of partial observability. It could be because you missed some preconditions and effects for some of the actions. It could be because of dynamism, there is extra people around, yes. What?
You think actions are
atomic. Yes, that's true too. I mean in the sense that in general, so in fact, one of the things I should have said here is the world is not deterministic, static, etc. The world is, the actions are not instantaneous. That's also an assumption we made. Every assumption could be wrong. Right? And it's not obvious which assumption is wrong. Okay, I mean, this is the point. I mean, I just want to make it sound much harder than what Russell and Narvik made it sound. Okay? And having said that, I will then tell you that replanning is a great thing, actually, because it makes. So anyway, so this you understood, right? Basically, get back on track is a reasonable thing, okay? And a special case of getting back on track is going from the current state to the goal state. That's a special case because goal state is on the track originally, okay? The important thing to remember is the only reason to get back to the old plan is to reduce the planning cost. There is no other reason. If on the other hand, if you are taking quality of the plan into consideration, and then you will have to consider the commitment cost. But we have not talked about it till now. Okay? Now, replanning as the universal antidote to domain modeling laziness. So we looked at this as if it's a bug, but it can be a feature. In some sense, I mentioned it earlier too. So if, as long as the world is forgiving, you can always go with a probably, possibly faulty domain model during planning and replan as needed. Okay? And you learn to improve the domain model only when the failures are getting too frequent. Okay? And then finally, in fact, what's worse is you may actually, there's nothing to learn for you. You knew the original model completely. You knew that the actions are durative. You knew how much duration each action has. You knew that the actions are stochastic. You knew exactly the probabilities of the various effects. Okay? And yet you blithely said, to heck with it all. I'll ignore the stochasticity. To make my life simple. And then let's see if it catches me. If it catches me, I'll figure it out. Okay? Now, that looks like the dumbest idea, right? That looks like, I mean, you have knowledge and you ignore it. It's not at all a dumb idea. In fact, we do it all the time. We basically approximate things just so that the speed of solution would be high, and the speed of getting to a solution would be high. Okay? So that because the alternative of going with the correct domain model that is actually given to you might be computationally intractable. So this is like, you know, I made it sound earlier as if you did not know any better. You knew the domain model you had and you were destined to fail anyway. But here you are actually given a stochastic domain model. I gave it to you. You ignore the probabilities. Okay, it looks like a dumb idea. But let's think about what happens. So suppose in fact the underlying domain has actions with stochastic outcomes. I have not even talked to you about how to do stochastic planning. I'm sure you may have some ideas, but I haven't talked to you about it. But I have a lazy way of doing stochastic planning, which is ignore the numbers. Okay, so if I have a bunch of actions which have different probabilities with which they'll have different effects, I would somehow determinize the problem. I'll take the model, domain model, which was stochastic to begin with, I'll determinize it. How will I determinize it? I can do many different ways. One very obvious reasonable way of doing it actually is to just assume that every action will have exactly the effect that's most likely. So if each action has three possible effects, this happens with 0.7, this is 0.3, this is 0.2 and this is 0.1, you'll just assume the 0.71 is the only thing that happens. Ignore the other two. But that's the whole point, right? I mean, this is, you know, let's hope that the world is going to work with us. And then, you know, if you're lucky, in fact, the plan you made that way would be fine. Now, you determinize the problem, you start, and you then can use everything that you learned till now. You can call it FF or one of these planners. You solve the problem, which is of going from the current state to the required goal state, assuming actions behave exactly the way that you expect them to behave, and then start executing. So make the first action. Do the first action. And if you're lucky, the state that comes back at you, basically the state that you observe, would be the state that you that would happen if in fact the most likely effect happened. Okay? If not, you get a different state. Replan. Right? As dumb as it might sound, in fact, the first time and as well as the second time, stochastic planning was used as a competition track in international planning competition. This idea won the day. The best stochastic planners, of which I'll teach you a whole bunch, are all useless in the competition domains, where the domains were in such a way that the way the setup was exactly this. They will give you the exact domain model, actions whose, you know, stochastic outcome probabilities are all given to you. It's complete domain model. Okay? And then the way you are supposed to do this problem is that since it's a stochastic world, so you make your plan, you're given the problem, and then you think a little bit and you then say, do this action. So you send the action to the simulator. The simulator tells you, here is your new state. Then you send the simulator, here is my next action. And it tells you, here is my new state. And then when you reach the goal state, you get a reward. This is a reasonable thing to do, right? Now, you know, one of the good thing about simulators is, as they say, on the internet, nobody needs to know that you're a dog, right? And similarly, and in this competition, nobody needs to know that you are not a stochastic planner, only that you won the competition. Okay, so Sang-Wook Yoon, the guy, you know, he's one of the guys who you heard of a lot. So he had a great idea for doing stochastic planning. And so he introduced that into the planning competition. Several other people have other great ideas. They introduce all those planners into the competition. Only Sang-Wook was slightly worried. What if this is an overkill? So he wrote for himself a straw man planner, which is FF Replan. It does exactly what we said it does, which is, you know, determinize the problem, completely determinize the problem, right, in only one way, solve it using classical planners, do the first action, and then they come back and tell you what the state is. If the state is wrong, is not what you're expect. If the state is what you expected, then you do the next action. If it's not, you very quickly start from that state, go to the goal state using the FF again. Take the first action of that and give it. And to his horror, his straw man planner won the competition. And his own planner came second. Okay? And so, you know, some of us so made this nice t-shirt. Well, I wanted to at any rate. I mean, there's this t-shirt saying 30 years of research into programming languages and C++ is the result. I mean, I've seen somebody wearing this. Okay? And so a variation on that is 20 years of research into decision theoretic planning and FF Replan is the result. I mean, that means the best idea for solving problems is to ignore the domain model. And this, believe it or not, caused a lot of controversy. And the people who wrote certifiably good stochastic planners all cried, you know, this is not fair. There's something wrong. Okay, so in fact, the first time around, FF Replan won. The second time around, what happened was Sang-Wook Yoon was the guy who ran the competition. Sang-Wook Yoon and Bob Gyuwan, you know, these are the people who did this. They ran the competition, so they didn't enter FF Replan. And so, and this was last year, you know, and so when the competition results were being, not last year, 2006, So when the competition results were being pointed out, and there was some guy who won, who was a stochastic planner, who won, Bob Given also pointed out that, by the way, in all these domains, FFV plan still kills all these guys. It is not in the competition, but it kills it, right? And so this led to a lot of bad blood, because the people who won the competition fair and square felt they were kind of, their contribution was reduced, you know. But I don't care. I mean, it's very important to know that, you know, first of all, this is not a bad technique at all. We do this all the time. We do not look for the domain model in all its gory details. Okay? We should be forced into gory domain models. We should get by with the simple domain models as much as possible. There's nothing wrong with that. It's an honorable thing to do. Okay? And furthermore, in fact, it turns out that one idea behind this replanning approach for FF replan is really, you can think of it as replanning, but you can think of it also slightly differently. You can think of it as solving a harder problem by solving its relaxation. Okay? If I told you FF replan the way I told you, it looks like, my God, how did it work? But think about it the following way. Every stochastic domain can be sampled. Suppose I developed 30 samples, and each sample, for each action, I sample its effect. Okay? So 30 new domains, and in each domain, I solve the problem and find the action that seems to be the first action in most of these cases, and do that. There's nothing wrong with that, because in fact, that is just handling probability by sampling. It's just that in this particular case, you did it with one sample. It's just the most greedy sample possible. Okay. So anyway, I think it's a nice little detour, which also tells you that, in fact, if you are into pushing FF replan forward, in fact, there's some new work that we did recently, Sangwook was involved, which basically says you can think of the way FF replan works can be understood mostly in terms of getting samples, getting deterministic samples, and solving them using a deterministic planner. There's nothing wrong with it. Okay, so for example, irrespective of what your language is, you may want to use the fastest solvers out there. Planners were doing SAT solving. Deterministic planners were using SAT solvers to solve the to make the plans. Similarly, stochastic planners could potentially use deterministic planners using sampling techniques to do planning faster. Yes, sir.
So, this idea is pretty much the same thing you can do. When we go somewhere and we go to a stage, we don't really consider all the options.
Yeah, I agree.
We just stay there, and if it's not what we expected, we just respond from that stage.
Yeah, I agree. No, but what is interesting is in combinatorics, I mean, humans are not, they never say we never say we are optimal. We say we are rational, more rational than other guys, but even that is very suspect. We are never optimal, okay? But a combinatorial algorithm, you know, in a controlled, reasonably controlled environment is actually doing better than the algorithms that take stochasticity into account. That is telling you something. So that means what we are doing stupidly is actually not stupid at all. You know, evolution has, Pat Robertson has, you know, got us to the point where we knew exactly how to use the domain models. Yes?
So that's not necessary. I think part of what humans are doing also with FF replan might not be doing is learning. Because you could have a situation...
No, but that's the point. That is exactly the point, which is that you could do learning, but I might decide not to learn anyway. There's nothing to learn. I have, in fact, in front of me the entire domain model in this case.
Right, but you could throw FF replan into cycles. You could always return the same state to it, no matter what action it did.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, because the...
Yes, I agree. But then the sampling approach...
Yeah, that's only possible if your domain model is faulty. Yeah, I agree. Right.
It's only possible if your domain model is... But here is the other interesting thing, and you know, we're kind of jumping way ahead, but once you start having stochastic domain models, is there really a difference between having correct domain model with probabilities being wrong versus, you know, not having correct domain model to begin with? Because I can put everything with low probabilities. Okay, but in general, the thing, of course, is, you know, here is, you know, lowly replanning, which actually does quite well as a nice way of handling stochastic planning. And this should not be surprising to you at all if you remembered why replanning was needed to begin with, because it was a modeling failure, either intentional or accidental. And as long as the failure doesn't haunt you all the time, you know, you would like to live with the modeling failure rather than learn. The couple of other things. So quality sensitive replanning. Here actually things, so up until now, of course, you know, there are simple algorithms that have actually been done. So what I want to talk about, and I already mentioned to you in the rest of the class, that quality sensitive replanning is the more interesting thing. And in fact, the oversubscription planning that you thought about till now can actually come to aid. Okay? In essence, what you're doing in these cases, so for example, let's think of a scenario like this. You know, it's just one scenario that we happen to be particularly familiar with right now. So you have a rescue scenario, and a human and a robot together are trying to rescue people, supposedly. Okay, so now the planning here has a characteristic of online planning. New people would be discovered that need to be rescued. Okay, replanning, of course, because you had a plan, and then there is like a big chair in front of you, or a big bureau has fallen down, and so you can't get out of it. Okay. Opportunistic planning, you're trying to rescue a little dog there, but there's a really cute kid who is here. Now, of course, you know, I don't even know how you want to handle that, you know, depending on where your sensitivities are, but you have potentially an opportunistic planning here. You know, do you do that or do you take care of this? Okay. And then, more importantly, commitment sensitivity. So especially if you have multiple, because you have robots as well as humans in the same situation, and maybe there are multiple robots too, okay, then you say, you know, to your friend, you know, if we are trying to solve a problem together, you say to your friend, hey, you do this, I'll do this. Now, but I told you that I'll do this. Now, if I change my mind and not do it, originally, it could have been either way. You could have done that, I could have done this, or I could have just not done anything. I mean, many people in the team projects are like very popular in graduate courses and undergraduate courses, because there's always some people in the team who have the best time, right? I mean, they have nothing, and the rest of the people just, you know, carry them along, okay? The worst team member is not the one who doesn't do anything. The worst team member is the one who says, I'm working on this, you guys work on this other stuff, and doesn't do it. That's the one that people will go and squeal on to the professor, right? Because the guys who don't do anything, at least they didn't worsen your grade. This guy definitely worsened your grade. Okay, so commitment matters. If you publicize, you said that you're going to do something, and if you don't do it, there's a penalty. Okay, so in this kind of a scenario, planning is continually replanning. Okay, and the question, of course, is can partial satisfaction planning help? What could help? I mean, in fact, what could help, of course, is every time the state changes, the question, of course, is to reselect the objective. Now, that simple idea winds up doing everything right. Suppose you have the goal of finding aliens, which was not fixed previously. It wasn't fixed because the way you selected the objectives, you decided that the relaxed plan for that was too costly, so you didn't pick it. But now you are in a different state. From this state, suddenly the node is reachable. So the reward for finding the aliens has always been the same. It was very high. But it was cost also was very high before because of the state that you started from, but now it could change. Furthermore, you are adding new goals. So every time you re-select objectives, you're looking at the new goals as well as the old goals, as well as, you know, the old goals, some of which actually you didn't select previously, but you might wind up selecting now. And that will happen because the state changed. And, you know, at least conceptually, you have everything that you need in front of you. Okay? And so, of course, the question, of course, is how often are you going to do this re-selection of objectives? Okay, that is a trickier issue. I'll go here and come back. In general, monitoring for optimality is a harder problem because, in some sense, remember, monitoring for execution failure involved taking what needs to be true in the goal state, regressing it to see what must hold at every point in the plan, and if it doesn't, then you change. But monitoring for optimality, especially when new goals are being thrown in, and the old goals might become active. It's not as easy. Okay? And in particular, in fact, one of the other problems is correctness is a local criterion. A plan is correct or not correct because of itself. Optimality is a global criterion. A plan is, you know, optimal or inoptimal, not because of itself, but because there are other better plans. What? Which there weren't before, but now there could be. Okay, so in fact, one of the interesting things that you need to do, and in, as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking about it. By the way, much of this stuff, some of these slides I made like last week, I mean, I never thought about it before. So you're getting what could potentially be completely wrong, and you know, it hasn't been written about, but I think it's probably right. But one thing that you could do is, for those of you who know about truth maintenance systems, you know, how many of you know about truth maintenance systems? So whenever you make a conclusion, let's say in a logical system, right, you remember what were all the initial state facts which allowed you to make this conclusion. Now, if I change the database, you can quickly then see which of these will go out of, which of these cannot be proved anymore. This is normally called truth maintenance systems. What is interesting is that sometimes your proofs are non-monotonic. When your proof is non-monotonic, it's like, so there is the reason I decided to prove that this guy killed, you know, the victim is because there is no other smoking gun. And so I'll assume, as long as there is no other explanation, I assume this is the guy who did it. So it's like, the reason I decided that Tweety the bird flies is because I assume Tweety the bird is a normal bird. And I just assume so. And then if later on I come and tell you Tweety is ostrich, then it's no longer normal bird. Apparently ostriches are never normal. And so now some other proofs that you've done previously fail. As long as you remember not only what led to the failure, but absence of what allowed you to prove, then you can do truth maintenance and you can actually, you know, decide what got, whose truth got affected. More or less you would need that sort of a thing for optimality monitoring too. Okay, there is a paper which is sort of okay, but actually it got like a best student paper award last year, just last year, for doing more or less a simple optimality monitoring with no new goals coming in. Okay, and so you can see how, at least as far as this particular sub-branch is concerned, there's not been that much work. So you could actually think clearly about what should be done to monitor for optimality in these kinds of scenarios. And then the last thing that I want to mention before we go away, which I already mentioned multiple times, is once you publicize your plan, you essentially, it's no longer your plan. You now have gotten into more goals than you originally were trying to solve. Okay, this is true. This is always the case. And it's not just a cognitive thing. It's just, there are good reasons why, you know, because in a multi-agent scenario, based on what you are going to do, other people have decided what they are going to do. It's not just you anymore. Okay, so what that means is, this is the first time when going from scratch is no longer an option. Okay, so for example, you know, yeah, you know, to heck with it, now I don't want to even go to Tucson, you know, I don't feel like going to Tucson, but that's not an alternative because that's not the cheapest plan. You know, there's this guy who's waiting for me, so sometimes I have to go all the way to Casa Grande to say hello, if in fact the cost of, you know, making them unhappy is too high, even though I no longer am going to Tucson. Okay, so the issue of course is that you have to, you know, realize that when you make the plan, you have and publicize it and you start partially executing it, you have all sorts of commitments. And then these put additional soft constraints essentially on the plan. And the violation of those soft constraints leads to penalties on the plan. Okay? And again, you can capture this as either oversubscription planning or the PDL 3.0 semantics. Okay? And if you are trying to do this as a oversubscription planning, let's say in that model, so how would you actually talk about goals for which not doing them will get you a slap on the face? Doing them, nothing. It's like honesty is the best policy kind of thing. For being honest, nobody gives you like a little thing to wear. But if you're dishonest and you get caught, you'll be put in jail. Okay? So how do you model those? We model them basically in terms of penalties. There are incentives and there are penalties. There are positive rewards, there are negative rewards. Okay, so not picking this goal is a huge negative. Okay, so you can essentially now have for goals both positive rewards and negative rewards. And you know, in fact, it's still, you know, we're thinking more, but it seems reasonable to say that any goal can have both numbers, both a number for doing it and a number for not doing it. Okay, and once you have that, what's interesting is, remember, one of the things in oversubscription planning is that the null plan was a reasonable plan. It will have, you know, zero net benefit. But now null plan will have negative net benefit. You know, it's one thing not making anybody happy, but another thing making a whole bunch of people unhappy by not doing anything. Okay? So you can capture the commitments made by agents based on the current plan in terms of either the trajectory constraints or in terms of costs associated with these new goals which didn't exist before. So think of new goals for somebody like this, Muri rescue scenario robot. New goals can come in multiple ways. One, because the human tells the robot, oh, by the way, you should also, you know, rescue that little cute girl out there. That's an extra goal. You didn't even think it was important. You know, it wasn't part of, it's not on your plate. Now you have to deal with it. And the other one is you just jump into this kid who needs to be rescued. And you are on the way to rescue maybe like a book or a dog or something. And now you suddenly say that, well, I have to change my objectives. I have to pick these two. So that goal sort of, you know, either it was or the alien kind of a thing, where this goal was sleeper goal before, but it became active because of the state. And then there is this third kind of a goal, which was only because you said you were going to do a particular plan. Now there are certain goals that you should achieve, otherwise you will get penalties. And all of this can be handled essentially as an oversubscription planning problem. Okay. Now, of course, there is this question as to where are these numbers coming from. Exactly how much should I say is the negative penalty? I mean, how much should I say is the penalty for not meeting my friend in Casa Grande? Domain modeling problem. Right? Cost numbers come from the same place where the actions, preconditions, and effects come. You know, just made up. You know, or you learned. Okay. Let's see. One other thing, the last one, is that this whole discussion about commitments and penalties for handling commitment goals is that brings up this issue which I mentioned earlier. What allegiance, if any, and by the way, allegiance is a very hard word. I didn't know the spelling. I had to check on the Google. This is the correct one, so you may want to remember. So what allegiance do you have to your old plan? Okay? Turns out none. Never do you have any allegiance to your old plan. Okay, there are two cases. Case one, the only reason you may want to stick to the old plan in terms of the actions you said you would do is because essentially you want to salvage the planning cost. Planning cost. Okay, but even if you have quality considerations like this my friend business that I threw in, right, or like I made commitments, what your allegiance is not to the actions you chose, but the commitments you made. So my previous plan involved taking a blue Mercedes to go to Tucson and say hello to my friend in Casa Grande. I'm not stuck with the blue Mercedes. I can take a yellow Yugo or something car, as long as I stop by in Casa Grande. So your allegiance is never to the plan, it is to the commitment. And why is this interesting? Because it's interesting because most of the work in replanning somehow thinks replanning means you should keep the old plan there. It turns out that is a means to the end. Keeping the old plan will also make sure that you will keep your old commitment. But what you really need to do is to keep your old commitments. And it may be, there may be more optimal ways of keeping your old commitments, or even ignoring them, if in fact the penalties for those commitments are small enough. Like, for example, I send an iPod touch to my friend instead of actually going and meeting him. I think he would forgive me. So, you know, I'll decide what is costly versus cheaper for me. Okay. So, I will stop there. This area is reasonably virgin in the sense the interesting question of doing monitoring in the context of quality. You know, as I said, a reasonably obvious idea, well implemented and well researched, got the best student paper award last year in ICAP. So you now know what to aim for. And then in terms of using replanning as a way of handling harder planning problems, that's fine. You know, you could do this for stochastic planning, you can do it for dynamic planning, you could do it for... So everything else that we talk about till now onwards will be considering how to handle the domain models directly upfront during planning, more complex domain models directly upfront in the planning. But if you fall asleep during those classes, you can always go back to this. If you understood classical planning, you can always replan and, you know, and see if you can get out. Okay, that's it. Thank you.